We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
And make sure you following us on all the social medias, because we out here. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet. Did someone say OnlyFans? MySpace, Tinder, and catch us ticking on the top.
Hey.
And Google Plus.
Can't forget Google Plus. In this episode, we'll be putting you up on Stacey Abrams wants to run for president one day, and Kamala Harris will be the first vice president to be immortalized in Madame Tussauds Wax Museum.
And San Francisco creates committee to explore reparations for black citizens. Louisiana State University is making history as they've named their first black president.
But first, let's jump into black Oregonians are imprisoned at a rate almost four times that of white people. Whew. Racial disparities are embedded in all aspects of Oregon life, but incarceration rates are particularly jarring. Black Oregonians are imprisoned at a rate almost four times that of white people. State prison data shows that of April 2020, there were 307 white people imprisoned per 100,000 in the population. That number for black people, it's 1,126 per 100,000, 3.7 times more than their white counterparts. The data covers all age demographics and was reported to the Vera Institute of Justice, a national nonprofit, by the Oregon Department of Corrections in 2020. Vera Institute Senior Research Associate Jacob Kang Brown calculated the rates using the latest population estimates by the U.S. Census Bureau. He says the figures should alarm everyone. What it boils down to is 1% of black people in Oregon are in the state prison system. Oregon is bad, but you see this everywhere, Kang Brown says. Anytime you see this data, it's a cause for concern. Since George Floyd was murdered in May 2020 by a Minneapolis police officer, protests have shifted public opinion and police reform bills have passed in waves, including Oregon. But much of the change hasn't trickled down to inmates already locked up. It's the first time I've heard elected officials say white supremacy and structural racism out loud. But the actions they've taken haven't been consistent with that rhetoric, says Bobbin Singh, executive director of the Oregon Justice Research Center. I think that's especially true for those who are incarcerated, he says. Oregon still has a long way to go. Elected officials and leaders need to openly acknowledge how the state history of racist exclusion and disparate policing has led to a generation behind bars. Prisons and the criminal legal system are designed to control and dominate certain populations, Singh says. We have to be honest, even if it causes discomfort, about what these systems are rooted in, and also be willing to openly acknowledge how we've been complicit in sustaining these structures. That's a hard reality for folks.
So this just makes me think of, like, you know, learning Oregon specifically in the past of this being created as the white utopia.
Right.
And understanding the things that through history have been set up to limit the blacks from participating as citizens of this state.
Right.
And then we take into account where these incarceration rates are four times that of the counterparts. It makes perfect sense. And this is one of the things that I think people, I wish they would take this into account, is the structures that were set up back then were passed on to the next generation that were trained as far as officers, as far as bailiffs, as far as attorneys. This game is passed down. You get mentors in any industry you're in.
Right.
You get mentors, and the people that go off the rails typically and have a radical take, meaning maybe are thinking more towards what actually is just.
Right.
That's usually a situation where gets pushed to the fringe, like, oh, you're doing too much. And most people are pulled into the systems that have been existing and the game that's been passed down by other people who were not trying to see anybody outside of themselves.
Facts.
Exists in this place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real interesting to see how the systems haven't changed And there have been no, like, major historical, like, huge events where it was like, okay, and now things have happened within all the systems across, you know, all these different touch points for us. But the people, the citizenry, especially white folk, are people that are on the side of on the side of the cone where they're not dealing with certain oppressions. You know, it could be race, it could be sex, it could be gender. The systems haven't changed, but they still want to kind of like lean towards this direction, like things are different. And it's like, based on what? You know what I'm saying? Like, how are they different? The system, you know, the system hasn't changed. So what are these differences that you're looking for that you want to use as an indicator that things have gotten so much better? Like, what are you talking about right now? It's weird, yo. It's just weird.
It just stays in that space. And I think sometimes, you know, you get burnt out on wasting air on the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there's, as I've said multiple times, there are people who are committed to misunderstanding. So no matter how you break this down to try to get them to understand where you're coming from, no matter how plain the reference, the simile, the comparison, their commitment to misunderstanding won't allow them to say, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's that.
Making a conscious choice to be on the wrong side.
Well, San Francisco creates a committee to explore reparations for black citizens.
Hey.
The San Francisco Board of Supervisors approved a task force this week that will study reparations through financial compensation and community programs for descendants of enslaved people in America. Hey. On Tuesday, the Associated Press reported the board voted unanimously to form a 15-member African-American Reparations Advisory Committee, including black San Franciscans who have suffered displacement, homelessness, incarceration, or other issues. The appointments of this Reparations Advisory Committee is an historical event, as I am unaware of any other legislative body in place to prioritize injustices and create a true reparations plan in a package for black people, said Board President Shaman Walton. The committee will have 2 years to devise a plan to show how a citywide reparations program would work. To make whole those who have been wronged or who continue to suffer from harm from the past wrongs, San Francisco has the opportunity to lead the way in addressing the harm that far too many African-American families have experienced, says Cheryl Davis, director of the city's Human Rights Commission. At one time, San Francisco's black community was larger. However, gentrification and higher living costs have changed the demographic makeup, the AP reports. Although African Americans are just 5% of the total population, they make up 35% of the homeless population.
Mm.
San Francisco will become the largest city to embark upon a reparations program for its citizens. Evanston, Illinois, a Chicago suburb, approved $10 million in reparations for its black residents in March. Also, the last city council in July, Asheville, North Carolina, voted unanimously in support of reparations as well. That's nuts.
Yeah.
North Carolina?
Yeah. Who would have saw that coming?
Yeah. You know, I wonder with these of the idea of like reparations, because I think that, you know, through history, historically, it's been this idea like, oh, we're just going to get handed over some cash deposits or something. but seeing something like, you know, the Chicago... or Evanston, I mean, outside of Chicago, them actually passing the $10 million in reparation. Like, what does that look like?
Right.
I wonder how that, when they're presenting that, if that affects the approval. Because if it's, we're dumping this into, programs, is that just a general term, a general statement? And there's no specifics to it, so nobody really knows where that money is put towards. That's one of the things that I wonder.
right.
Yeah.
Also, like, $10 million is not a lot of money. If this is the beginning of some annual fund, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is just a new department, Department of Reparations, and it's constantly being funded, then sure, yeah, I'm with that, too. I'm with that. There is no lump sum fee that's going to correct everything. Yeah. there's just, you know, too many things that need to be swung in the opposite direction. And bruh, Stacey Abrams wants to run for president one day. The former Georgia gubernatorial candidate and voting rights advocate said in an interview that it's important to her to be transparent about her political aspirations in an effort to inspire young people of color. Do I hold it as an ambition? Absolutely. The rising Democratic star told CBS Sunday morning. And even more importantly, when someone asks me if that's my ambition, I have a responsibility to say yes for every young woman, every person of color who sees me and decides what they're capable of based on what I think I'm capable of. While her comments about making a presidential run are new, what isn't is her desire to be a member of the United States executive branch. Over the summer, Abrams made similar comments when she was reportedly being considered as then Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's running mate. Since her run for Georgia governorship, Abrams founded her Fair Fight organization, which had a large hand in flipping her state's two Senate seats from red to blue earlier this year. In May, Biden says Abrams can be anything she wants to be, including president. I mean, I hear you, Joe. Anything she wants to be, except my vice president.
I'm the USA.
Joe, I think he's slick.
You know how, like, sometimes you hear something and it takes a second to, like, lead up? I got what you said and it bounced around, and that is hilarious.
We hear you, Joe. We hear you, fam.
You said you can be anything but my running mate.
That's it. That's it. Be anything you want over there. Yes.
Well, I think this could, after the precedence that's been set in this last election, this at this point seems very
feasible,
plausible.
I agree. I definitely agree.
It's an air.
Yeah.
It's an air. Louisiana State University is making history as they've named their first black president.
Wow.
Louisiana State University is making history as they've named William Beale Tate as the first black president in the Baton Rouge school history. Additionally, the former University of South Carolina provost also became the first African-American president at a school in the Southeastern Conference. Quite frankly, I didn't think this day would come that an African-American would become president in the SEC. Tate said, according to the USA Today, of becoming the head of a school that black students were not even allowed to attend until 1953.
Yo, that's not that long ago, fam.
At all.
Sheesh.
Y'all made it possible, he continued. I'm really excited to be a part of this community. For me, this is all about how we can help students regardless of their background and give them opportunity to live their dream. Tate is slated to start his job on July 2nd, and contract negotiations are currently underway. LSU has been dealing with the scandal over alleged systematic mishandling of sexual harassment and violence complaints. Tate said Louisiana State will be a model for addressing sexual violence and Title IX complaints moving forward. If a person is found guilty of sexual harassment and violence, we need to remove them from campus as soon as possible, he said. Tate will take over for interim president Tom Gilligan. LSU's Board of Supervisors made Tate their selection late on Thursday after an in-person interview with three finalists. Kelvin Drogemeyer, former director of White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and Jim Henderson, president of University of Louisiana Systems, were the other two candidates. The vote was unanimous. 15 to goose egg.
Nice.
We worked very hard for a very long time to select a great leader for LSU, Board Chairman Robert Damp said, according to USA Today. It's a pivotal time for our university, but we're doing great things. You know, there's this, there's a sense of pride that comes from hearing stuff like this, but then there's also the flip of that.
Y'all late.
2021, right? Like the first are for things like first to step on Mars.
Yeah.
First to build a teleportation machine. Not first to be in a position at a school, at a company.
Yo, I totally feel you. Like, it's 2021. Can we stop having the first black anything? Can first that. Black just be... As a matter of fact, can we get this all wrapped up in 2021? Can we get all the first blacks out the way in 2021 so we can move into 2022 without having to establish the first black anything?
There's something that... and this is like... Some things can just be said with a name. Like, I would love to see, and it probably won't happen in my lifetime, where they just announce who people are by their names. Mm-hmm. Not black this, Asian American this. Because it's as if everything is an extra, an add-on. Yeah. But when you say a John McCain, you don't say white John Caucasian McCain. American. You don't give that. It's just everything else is. And I just would love for the point where my accolades and the things that I've done based on my name, and not my color.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matter.
But you know, hey, you know, we are post racism. Things have changed. And, you know, for all those wondering what we're even talking about, listen, you had a black president. And now you got a black vice president. What are you complaining about? How are we still here?
You know, I was just I was listening to a pod, and this is from like 2008. Mm. And we know what was happening in 2008.
Yeah, we do.
Obama was a running. And having listened to this conversation about someone saying, well, if Obama does get elected, can we just like quit blaming everything? Or can you guys quit blaming everything on race? Because if we have a black elect, and it was hearing that was like, yeah. You thought that was the solver for all of the problems?
Bruh. I wonder where that person is today. What are your thoughts today? Yeah, what are your thoughts today? Anywho, Kamala Harris will become the first vice president to be immortalized at Madame Tussauds Wax Museum. Kamala Harris will be the first vice president to be immortalized in the museum, which is slated to unveil her likeness and that of President Joe Biden later this year. According to NBC News, the museum released a sneak peek of developing images of Harris and Biden, which were done by a team of London studio artists. They created the clay heads and used hundreds of images of their subjects to achieve exact likeness, writes the Denver Channel. The museum said that the heads took 6 weeks to sculpt and the figures would take between 4 to 6 months to complete, reported the Denver Channel. We're honored to create a figure for Vice President Harris and reflect the significant moment in U.S. history for guests inside Madame Tussauds in New York, said Brittany Williams, spokesperson for Madame Tussauds. The outfits Harris and Biden wore at the 46th presidential inauguration ceremony will be duplicated for their wax figures. Madame Tussauds plans to unveil the figures later this year and place them in the Oval Office experience at the gallery in New York, according to the Denver Channel. Dope.
That is.
I don't really...
I wish they... Go ahead.
I'm going to just be honest. Like, I know this is cool for a lot of people. I don't really do wax museums like that. I think they're creepy.
Nah.
I went to the Black Wax Museum in Baltimore when I was in elementary school, and they covered a lot of slavery and civil rights and stuff. Just like... Wax museums in general are just creepy to me. And I know it's tied to a horror flick. Wax
museums look like dead people.
Yeah, man.
That's what it reminds me of. Like, especially for the black, because I feel like it took a while to, like, understand black. And when people, you know, go through the process and get made up for their funeral.
Yep.
There are some similarities in the looks of those teens.
Yeah, they wasn't getting it right. Yeah.
Hopefully they have in the background those Jordan Dior ones that Holler. Stole the show.
That would be tight. Oh, man, that'd be tight.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you though, bro. Like, I can't get jiggy with the wax museums at all. Yeah. Like, no, there's no nothing. Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I'd be like, I'll catch y'all when y'all come back outside. I'm going to go get something.
Yeah. Y'all going to get pictures? Y'all, cool. Yeah. I don't want to see them. That.
How much is it? That's cool. That's what's up. That's damn. Okay.
That's tight. All right.
Cool, that's cool. Tight. I'm cool.
What y'all about to do?
Who all in there?
Well, make sure you all check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 8 p.m. again as we sit down and run up the numbers. Mm,
run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Maddenly needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death. Mm. And then all of these charges need to turn into convictions. Facts. All of these convictions need to turn into whatever comes from that.
Hard time, ladies and gentlemen. That's what we want. Hard time. Yeah. Mm. Roof them.
Maybe punches in the face. Who knows? All of this for 50?
Mm. We got preferences. Oh, man.